content of the following broadcast is offered as is. It confers no rights or warranties. The opinions expressed here are solely those of the participants and may not reflect those of the Microsoft Corporation, its partners, friends, and family. Welcome to IT Heroes. And now here's your host, Michael J. Murphy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Murphy, your host. This is IT Heroes, Stories from the Trenches. These are the real stories of the men and women in IT making a difference every day. I'm pleased to have with me today Damon Christopher Jackson. Damon, welcome to the program.
Michael, thank you so very much.
My pleasure. Damon is a network admin for a major motion picture studio out in L.A., originally from Oakland, but been living in the City of Angels for about the last, 12 years now?
Thereabouts.
And we've been corresponding now, Damon, via email for about 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. We first met, I did an Active Directory webcast on new features of Windows Server 2003 back in November of 2003, and you were on that webcast, and you were involved at that time in a forest-to-forest trust setup. You were trying to get a forest-to-forest trust setup. For those of our audience that are not familiar with that terminology, why don't you explain what a forest-to-forest trust is and why you wanted one?
Well, primarily the reason why we wanted to implement a forest-to-forest trust was to minimize administration. We, like many other companies, acquire other organizations along the way. And this other organization already had a forest established. They had their own strategy of implementing technology. We wanted to go ahead and simplify everything, not necessarily needing to remember multiple usernames and passwords to access certain resources. So,
and without decommissioning the existing Active Directory structure in the acquired business.
That too as well, exactly. We didn't want to, is it possible to go ahead and migrate all that information? Yes, but we didn't want to take the time out to do that. We wanted to keep things up and running for that business. So the forest-to-forest trust most definitely simplified our little headache, and we proceeded forward.
And when we talk about trust relate, now we've been talking about trust relationships since NT4, right, Damon? And when we talk about trust relationships, what we mean is I have a domain, an Active Directory domain, a security boundary, and then I have another Active Directory domain, a separate security environment, and I want the resources from one to be accessible to the users in another. And so in this case, in the scenario that you had acquired a new business unit, it had its own Active Directory implementation, and you wanted your network admins to be able to cross that security boundary and access and manage the resources on the other side, right?
Absolutely.
Now, this was a brand new feature in Active Directory 2003. And the beauty of it is that in a forest-to-forest trust, if you have multiple domains, when you create that single trust relationship, all domains in both Active Directory forests trust all domains in the other. Were you in multi-domain environments when you created this trust?
Not initially. From each forest perspective, each forest had only one domain. But it most definitely gives us growth if we want to go ahead and expand to multiple domains with each respective forest.
Excellent. And what were some of the prerequisites for setting up that forest-to-forest trust? What did you have to do to make it work?
There are only three letters, DNS.
DNS. And what do I need DNS for?
Most definitely in simple terms, so that each forest will be able to see one another and go ahead and complete this connection for the forest-to-forest trust to be established.
And so what we're looking at there is really the service records, right?
We've got
the Active Directory domain controllers registering service records in DNS, and what I need is I need the domain controllers in both Active Directory forests to be able to do lookups to find the domain controllers in the other one. Right. Now, how did you do that? What was your DNS implementation?
Now, obviously, we're using Microsoft's DNS that comes with Windows Server 2003, so we don't have any concerns regarding third-party Unix-based DNS services. But we are relying on this DNS to go ahead and, again, establish the connection with the service records.
And did you, now, obviously you had in the acquired company, there was a DNS server, and in your company, there was a DNS server that supported the infrastructures in both places. How did you get them to see each other? Did you assign the other DNS servers as secondary DNS servers to the initial, or did you do replication in secondary zones?
We established replication in secondary zones.
Okay, so both DNS servers then shared their records with each other.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so when we talk about zones and zone transfers, what we're talking about is the replication of DNS data between DNS servers, and that's what you set up in your place.
Yes, sir.
And how'd that work for you?
Once we completed this little portion, we were able to go ahead and move forward with our forest, establishing the connection between the two.
And once the DNS is in place, Damon, I mean, what is there to creating a forest-to-forest trust?
Not much at that point. Of course, you need to make sure that your forest and your domain both have the functional level of Windows Server 2003. So
that's a good point.
Yes. The prerequisite of that, of course, is all directory controllers need to be at the Windows Server 2003 level.
So were you in a situation where you had 2000 domain controllers that needed to be upgraded, or were they all 2003 when you got on the project?
Let's see. For the company that I'm with, we were already at Windows Server 2003, and we had already moved our functional levels up to that Windows Server 2003 level as well. But once we acquired the additional company, they were still running on the 2000 products. So we knew we had to go ahead and update all of those services to the 2003 level. And then we could go ahead and start working on our trust relationship.
So got the DNS in place, upgraded all the domain controllers to 2003, raised the domain functional level to 2003, and raised the forest functional level to 2003.
Yes, indeed. Lots of fun.
And it's a weekend away from home, isn't it? And so that fulfills the prerequisites for the forest-to-forest trust.
Yes.
What then was the process for actually establishing it?
Well, you know, we finally went over to one of the features, or I should say one of the functions, Active Directory Domains and Trusts, to go ahead and establish that initial connection between the two.
Just using the new Trust Wizard in Active Directory Domains and Trusts.
Yes, and it's a great wizard, made life quite simple.
Now, were you able to, did you have administrator credentials in both places?
Now, since we had, obviously with our own, you know, forest, we have the credentials to go ahead and establish the trust. And since we've taken over this other business, since we've now acquired all of the information for security, we now have that as well.
So then from that one trust wizard, were you able to execute the trust on both sides because you had credentials for both sides of the trust?
The wizard most definitely allows us to complete that connection from one end for as long as we had the credentials on both sides, and of course we do.
Right on. And so in one wizard, in one interface, you were able to provide administrative credentials for your native domain and for the acquired domain. And so you were able to establish the trust just like that. It's worth mentioning to those folks that maybe are interested in exploring forest-to-forest trust for partner scenarios or vendor scenarios where you don't have the administrative credentials in the remote forest, the fella on that side can establish the trust by providing their own credentials and setting it up that way. Agreed?
Absolutely.
Okay. Great. Now, I want to talk about two today. So that's forest-to-forest trust. I also want to talk today because I'll tell you, man, this has been a problem for a lot of customers, and I'm finding a dearth of information on it. So I'd like you to share your experience with it, Damon, because I know you have some good experience in this area. The application of Windows 2003 Service Pack 1 to Exchange servers. What I'm hearing from folks is that there's a bunch of gotchas, there's a bunch of things that get broken, and there's very little good documentation on it. So what is your experience with that?
We've had a recent experience with Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1 in relationship to Exchange Server 2003. Most definitely, once the Windows Server 2003, the service pack is applied, our Exchange servers, all of them, we have front-end servers as well as back-end clusters, they all just stop functioning properly.
How many? How many Exchange servers?
Golly gee, let's see. What are we talking? Two, four. There are four front-end servers, and we have a humongous back-end cluster.
Okay.
So, you know, once we...
Four-node, eight-node, just to give us some idea of what we're talking about. So, wait a minute. So, that means that the SP1 was applied not just to, you know, individual machines, but to clustered machines?
That's correct.
Ah, dig it. Okay.
Yeah. which, of course, makes the complexity of resolving your problem a bit more difficult.
Yeah.
So... Once we were, you know, of course, things start with users calling.
And can I ask, what level of functionality was unavailable? I mean, could users not access their mailboxes at all? Or were certain, you know, were public folders down? What happened?
It seemed our problems relied upon the majority of our users who love to use OWA, Outlook Web Access. We received a lot of phone calls from a lot of users trying to access their mail via that method. We also have a Macintosh population. So they're using the product Entourage. And Entourage relies upon the very same function of the OWA component within Exchange. When we figured out there was a correlation between the two, we knew that something had happened specifically to our IIS services, Internet Information Services. So we started looking in that direction. But everything, of course, appeared normal.
And the MAPI clients were unaffected by this?
They were unaffected. So our Outlook 2003 users, they don't call. They were like happy as could be.
Okay.
So and that's what made it strange. Some of the population were calling with problems and some were not. And since we have a cluster, and you have IIS-related problems, we were looking at the cluster administrator. We were noticing everything reported properly, and we still just didn't understand what the problem could be. Once we decided to take a look at the OS level, and it was just by sheer coincidence, we noticed Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1.
So wait a minute. So does that imply then that the service pack was applied in I don't want to say in error, but it was applied without conscious planning?
I'd have to say it was done more realistically in error.
Okay.
And of course, when you have multiple people on staff, everyone needs to communicate. And we had an oversight here, but that's okay. We understood where our problem was.
You know,
now
this,
we need to
this,
know how to fix it.
You know, this sounds an awful lot like real life.
It is. Indeed, it is. It's very important for the entire crew to just remain on the same page, whether you agree or disagree, but of course you guys should agree, and just know what's happening next, what we're planning, how to continue to update our services. By the same token, keeping our services online for our users. So we just had an oversight, a lack of communication, and Service Pack 1 now exists in our environment.
And just to give the audience some idea of what we're talking about, how big is your IT staff?
Our IT staff consists of five additional people beyond myself.
Okay. And And now, what was the remediation for this?
Well, after pacing the floor and not knowing exactly which direction we were going to go in, one of the guys on staff decided to go to the Microsoft website and say, hey, we know Service Pack 2 for Exchange is coming soon. Let's just take a look to see if maybe we can get a prediction of when it might release. And lo and behold, when we looked, Service Pack 2 was released. So that most definitely gave us a big sigh of relief.
And did Service Pack 2 provide you with some remediation?
Well, it most definitely made our life so much easier once we knew, out of all of the webcasts that we've attended over the last couple of years, when Service Pack 1 for Exchange Server 2003 was released, I recall quite vividly a notion, or I should say a warning, to the presenter stating, if you have Exchange Server 2003, do not apply this service pack to those servers. It will break Exchange. So we had always known this, and we've just always just remained on pause for updating all of our services, keeping things online, implementing new technologies that Microsoft releases along the way. We were just going to just wait for Service Pack 2 to release, and then we'll move forward with our Windows updating. But since this happened in an error, a way that was not planned out, moving to or updating to the Exchange Service Pack 2 immediately gave us results.
Okay. So then for many of the problems that you experienced with the SP1 application to your Exchange servers, SP2 for Exchange provided a remediation.
Very quickly.
Excellent. Good to know.
You know, let me also add, Michael, in that process, we had to go through a preparation, ensuring that Service Pack 1 was functioning in a way that we desired. Even though we knew we weren't going to move to Service Pack 1 for Windows so quickly, we at least had a plan of what we wanted to accomplish along the way when we were going to implement Service Pack 1 for Windows. So we decided to just move on that strategy a bit earlier.
Oh, so you had already strategized what kind of configurations you wanted to see with SP1.
Exactly. We've been watching this for quite some time, and we've been talking about it and bouncing ideas around and just getting prepared for moving forward in the future. We just moved a little sooner than we planned to.
Can you give us a specific example, Damon?
Well, one of the major features that we have been looking forward to is the security configuration wizard.
Uh-huh.
We really want to lock down a lot of our servers. We feel that very confident that we have manually prepared things, but you never know. You might have overlooked something. So we wanted to make sure that we want to lock things down. We want to protect ourselves as best as possible.
And just to be clear, the Security Configuration Wizard is a utility that comes with, it's rolled up into Windows 2003 Service Pack 1. That it's a simple wizard that walks me through a variety of security configuration settings, not just from group policy, but beyond the scope of group policy, including firewall configuration, gives me all those security settings in one place and lets me lock that machine down. Correct?
100% I'm in agreement with you.
Right on. And the beauty of that, too, is, as I'm sure you discovered, you can save that configuration file. And if you have machines that serve the same function in your network, you can just import that file to those other machines. Is that what you ended up doing, or did you do individual configurations on a per-machine basis?
No, actually, we took advantage of this capability. We have multiple machines providing the same function. We manually set up the way we wanted it to be on each, per se, first machine in each particular role. And once we established that and we made sure things were running, we absolutely imported that same security configuration to the other identical type role servers and made life so much easier for us.
That's great. Well, Damon, we are just about out of time here, so I want to thank you for sharing your insights with us on forest-to-forest trusts and on Exchange SP2 with Windows Service Pack 1. I appreciate your time today.
Michael, thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. And ladies and gentlemen, I am Michael Murphy, and this is IT Heroes, Stories from the Trenches, the real stories of the men and women in IT making a difference every day.
IT Heroes, with your host, Michael J. Murphy, was recorded at Matador Studios in Monmouth Junction, New Jersey. Produced and engineered by Giles Davis. Original music performed and composed by Giles Davis.